This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
A great first hour of the show. Let's not even be humble about it. It was that good. It was that good. Hour two is going to be even better. It's going to be that much better. Don, you know, you've been doing this for a while.
For a while, yes. For some time, even.
Yeah. It was a beautiful first hour.
What's more, a while or some time?
I think a while should be longer.
It's been a while.
Well, is it just a while?
It's almost the exact same amount.
I've been doing this for some time or quite some time.
Quite some time is a lot.
No, quite some time means more than a while. But I feel like some time and a while are almost the same thing.
See, yeah, I don't. I don't feel that way. But, you know, I would defer to you if you're right. I just don't feel you are. Well, you know what? It's bringing Buster only.
Yeah.
He's been doing this
for a while.
Now, Buster, what's do you feel that a while and some time is the same?
Close, but I feel like some time is longer.
Really?
I don't know why it feels that way. Yeah, it does to me. I appreciate you pitching the question to me, though, because that's right up my alley.
Yeah.
Speaking of pitching, I told you this was going to be a great hour. So many important players in baseball getting hurt. And I'll just start off this way, Buster. I thought that Tony Clark, you know, the statement he released blaming it on the pitch clock was really odd. And I'm not saying that you just discount that. It should be looked at. But it seems like it's velocity that really is at fault for all these injuries. What are you hearing and what do you think?
Yeah, I thought his statement was completely disingenuous. And I also thought that it was just wrong, parts of it. You know, when he came out and he said that, you know, there was unanimous, he used the word unanimous in that statement, opposition to the pitch clock. Well, you know, and I know, because we walk into clubhouses every day and you talk to players, that's simply not true. Like, I'm guessing like 80% of the players probably are in favor of the pitch clock. And when he cited the pitch clock only as a reason, as you know, for all this absolute wave of injuries we've seen in baseball, I mean, what has he not been paying attention for the last 12, 15 years? And he knows that. Like, he knows there's so much information and has been for years about how the chase for velocity, you know, might be a factor. How the fact that pitchers now are trying to spin the ball harder than ever on every single pitch, they have become drag racers, where it's just maximum velocity, maximum spin, and lately maximum blowouts. And there are also factors like, you know, travel baseball and kids throwing more than ever. And in a professionals, as Alex Wood wrote, the pitcher wrote today that now pitchers throw year round in a way that they didn't when he first started. There were a lot of factors that went into it. And what's really bad about, you know, Tony Clark's statement and MLB's response is that you really get a sense that at a time when they could really use, the sport could really use a great collaborative relationship between MLB and the Players Association, there is none. And they're not going to talk at a time when they really need to get together and try to solve this problem. And I think people believe there are some things you can do.
See, I'm with you. I mean, I think the pitching situation's a problem, but I think the bigger problem is that these two sides just do not get along, and the league cannot grow and move forward with these two guys complaining to each other. Gerrit Cole described it as like a divorced couple, and nothing is ever accomplished. If MLB decided to just have a press conference that the sky's blue, Tony Clark would say, well, you know what? The cloud, it's actually white, and we're going to strike to prove it. Like, they, instead of looking at this issue and trying to figure it out, they just use it as a bargaining tool or a way to snipe at one another, and nothing ever gets accomplished. I know there's always a problem between the bosses and the union in all sports, but at some point you got to collaborate if you want to grow your sport.
Don, completely agree with you, and it felt like both statements that were released were political, right? I mean, Tony Clark has been, you know, under siege. We know we've been reading about the, you know, the issues within the union. And this felt like a chance to go out there and try to rally the troops in a way. And it's like no one believes it. And we've seen, you know, the words of Justin Verlander in an interview he did on Sunday, and Gerrit Cole and Alex Wood and Jameson Taillon, like, the players know it's a really complicated, nuanced issue, and why do that with that issue as opposed to trying to build a bridge to the other side so you can have conversations about what can we do to make the situation better?
Now, one thing, Buster, and this is a two-pronged question. Number one, he's not going rogue, so there must be pitchers that do not like the pitch clock. He's
correct.
Speaking for them.
Well, and I say this, and I've had a lot of conversation with pitchers who believe that the pitch clock has contributed to whatever degree to these injuries. And that's something for Major League Baseball. It's important for them to listen to that. You know, in the spring, I did a podcast a couple months ago where I had Zach Eflin of the Tampa Bay Rays and Rich Hill, you know, oldest pitcher in baseball, Caleb Cosen, the pitching coach of the Phillies, and they talked about, you know, in some cases, I know Rich and Zach believe that it contributed to injuries, and what, you know, the feedback I got from them and I've gotten from others, you know, in clubhouses is, look, at least give us a timeout that the hitters have, because there are moments to draw, you know, to use the drag racer analogy, where they begin to redline, they can feel themselves getting tired in a moment, and they could use a timeout. And maybe you do that three times a game. Maybe it's one an inning. Whatever the number is, they should do that. And I know Major League Baseball, you know, they've talked about that internally. That's something that they should listen to and follow up with and implement as soon as they can. Like today, come out and basically say, look, starting today, we're giving our umpires instructions that we're going to give pitchers the chance to call a timeout. Because there are a lot of pitchers who believe that that is a factor, to whatever degree.
All right, so that's a factor, then. This is the second part of the question. So that could help solve the pitch timer conundrum. But, Buster, people chase velocity because velocity gets paid and also gets people
yep.
out. So how are you going to, unless you just completely change the sport, how are you going to de-emphasize velocity?
Yeah, the incentive to chase velocity is there for pitchers, it's there for teams, and I think, you know, when Theo Epstein, before he left the commissioner's office, had begun to have conversations about in trying to reestablish the preeminence of starting pitchers, okay? And it would take some time. It's not something where you could change a rule today and suddenly everything would be better. But I think it would help baseball move toward conditions that might be safer for pitchers to, you know, to work in. And that would be, you know, to reduce this absolute parade of relief pitchers that we're seeing, where everybody's coming in following a starting pitcher who's been told, throw as hard as you can for as long as you can, and then we're going to bring in the relievers after you. Reduce the number of pitchers that you have available to each team, you know, per game. You know, and my own feeling is that if you were to tell managers, look, you're limited to five pitchers per game, you know, with obvious exceptions for blowouts and for injuries, and that way there's some incentive, hey, let's leave the starting pitcher in there. And you know starting pitchers, if you do that, then they're not going to be maxing out if you're trying to get them in the sixth or seventh inning. Max Scherzer told me an idea last year where it's called the double hook, where you tie the starting pitcher to the use of the designated hitter. So you basically say, look, you know, manager's there with a choice. If he leaves the starting pitcher into the game of the sixth or seventh inning, that means more plate appearances with your DH. You have to build some incentives there. And from the union perspective, I think this would be really important to try to restore the preeminence of starting pitchers, to keep them in games longer. And, oh, by the way, there'd be a collateral impact, because offensive numbers would go up, right? Which is what they've been trying to get to. If you have starting pitchers stay in the game six or seven innings more routinely with fewer relievers involved, offensive numbers would go up, starting pitchers' value would go up, and because pitchers aren't redlining as much, then you maybe reduce some of the injuries.
Well, Buster, Don has said this for years, and he's right. All of us, we don't understand. I mean, we understand why Gerrit Cole gets a lot of money, but guys that pitch five innings, why are these starters getting a lot of money? You're right, if they extended them and they became seven-inning pitchers, to me they'd be worth more and they'd be paid more.
And they would go back to, and this is why a few years ago, an official with the union said, what's our biggest issue? And I don't know if he expected me to say revenue sharing or something like that, but I said, you got to restore the preeminence of starting pitchers for the reasons that we mentioned. And these guys for years have been the headliners in the sport. They've been the Hulk Hogans, you know, the Rock, mm-hmm. the start of Roger Clemens versus Pedro Martinez. Baseball is losing that. They need to put these guys back on a mountaintop. But what's happened is, because there's such groupthink in baseball, so many teams now are basically not even bothering to develop the good old-fashioned starting pitcher who goes seven innings. They're basically just asking pitchers in the minor leagues, look, throw as hard as you can, spin the ball as hard as you can, throw your best pitch over and over and over, red line. And so it would take some time to go back the other way and to say, in whatever, 2027, we're going to go back to a situation where teams are only going to be allowed to use five pitchers in a game. Or let's say they reduce it per game. You know, each team is restricted to 10 to 12 pitchers on their roster. Something so that these outings for starting pitchers get longer. And I think that would help everybody for a lot of different ways. But they have to put the rule in place because teams are not incentivized to do that right now.
If things stay the way they are, would there be any appetite to change the win to four innings instead of five?
Boy, yeah, I know, because it's kind of ridiculous. Now, maybe that's how you do it, right? Maybe that's some of the incentive you build in for the union because, you know, that's a stat now that has gone out the window. Justin Verlander, as he comes back with 257 wins, you know, he's not only chased trying to become the last guy to get 300 wins, but we may never see another 200-game winner with the way this is going right now.
All right, so that's a problem. That's obviously a big, big deal. Now, we've had an interesting beginning of the season. You've got the Pirates playing well. You've got the Guardians playing well. The Yankees are 9-2. What's the biggest surprise there? And I think the Yankees could sustain, not 9-2, but they can sustain. Do you think that either the Pirates or the Guardians could sustain?
I think the Pirates can. You know, they have time. Ben Cherington, the general manager, you know, they've collected all these terrific young players. Brian Reynolds, they've actually invested in some of them, like we've seen with the Atlanta Braves, where they sign the players to, you know, long-term deals when they're really young. And they've hit the timing right, so they're all getting better together in a weak National League Central. So I think they're here to stay. You know, the Guardians, on the other hand, they just lost Shane Bieber for the year. You know, we'll see if that has an impact. And they can't hit home runs in an era in which, you know, teams live and die by the home run. It's going to be tough for Cleveland to, you know, maintain an offense over the course of the year. And I do think the Yankees have some staying power. I think one of the challenges for them is going to be, obviously, you know, the question of how much can they get out of Gerrit Cole? You know, will he come back? If he comes back, you know, how are they going to go out and add during the course of the year? This is one of the, you know, the collateral impacts of all these pitching injuries, is that you're going to have so many contenders going after a very small pool of available pitchers, like Jesus Luzardo of the Marlins. But I think their offense is here to stay. You know, the additions of Soto and Verdugo to me were absolutely perfectly timed, you know, to be along with Judge at the top of the lineup. And, you know, one of the questions I have is at what point does Aaron Boone put Anthony Volpe in the number one spot in the lineup?
Tonkin gets traded to Minnesota. Teron pitches one game, gets DFA'd. Is Stearns just actually auditioning guys like in season? Or is he just kind of throwing darts up, trying to see if something sticks? Like, what's the game plan here with some of these moves?
No, and I think that what you're seeing is someone who was really good at running a, you know, small market team with the Brewers, using a lot of those type of moves and trying to plug and fill and trying to find solutions. And it's why, as we go forward, if they don't improve, then you got to believe that, because right now he's got Steve Cohen's ear, that, yeah, trading Pete Alonso is going to be on the table at some point. And it would be a huge, and it would be a big deal. But, you know, I mentioned the Pirates getting the timing right. What really, for me, is becoming apparent is that the timing of the Mets and you know, where the veteran position players are versus where their organizational pitching is, it's really poorly timed. By the time they get their organizational pitching in order, then you know what? You know, guys like Lindor and Nimmo, you know, they could be on the backside. And it's something that David's going to have to address as he takes over here.
Talk with Buster Olney, our colleague at ESPN, here on the Michael Kay Show. Now, I love the game of baseball. It gives me no joy whatsoever to just bash them. But, Buster, how are they allowing the Athletics to play 3 years in a minor league ballpark? I mean, if Tony Clark wanted to really flex, he'd refuse to have his union play in a minor league ballpark. It doesn't make sense. Couldn't there have been a better solution to that?
Yeah, you would assume, and I agree with you. You know, today we're just going to rip everybody at the top of the leadership chain on both sides because it doesn't feel like there's any leadership on this issue. I cannot believe that the other 29 owners don't step in and say, look, this is not going to work for us. Because you think of what John Fisher right now of the A's, he's kind of like the guy in the golf club who's running around the course wearing nothing but a jock strap, swearing at everybody, you know, not acting, you know, conducting himself with the same rules everybody else expects. And you keep wondering, when are the other 29 owners going to say, look, this makes us all look bad. It's terrible for the sport. You know, it's not only have they been an embarrassment in recent years, but if you allow them to go to Sacramento, where, you know, you get the 14,000-seat park with 4,000 of it, people sitting on the grass, are they literally playing in a minor league facility? But because they're not going to have any revenue stream, it guarantees that they're going to tank at least three or four more seasons. Beyond the seasons that they've tanked, they're going to have to borrow the integrity of all the other teams. I agree with you. Why not just go to them, as they have with other teams, and say, look, we're buying you out. We'll give you market price, but we're buying your franchise, and then essentially put them up for auction and restart conversations. Hey, Oakland, put together a proposal. Sacramento, put together a proposal. Vegas, put together a proposal. You know that there's going to be people, billionaires, who want to buy a baseball team. You're probably going to get a much better situation than you have right now. I don't understand why they stand by and let it happen.
Now, we had on your colleague Jeff Passan a couple of weeks ago, and I asked him straight out, what do you think Soto is going to get? And he said $50 million a year. Are you in agreement, or do you think it's going to be a different number?
I do. I think he's right. I think he's going to break Ohtani's contract record, and that is the actual number. The fake number is the $700 million number, okay? Present day value, his contract's worth $461 million. He's going to break that. He's in an amazing position because, first and foremost, he's a Hall of Fame talent. The closest thing we've seen to Ted Williams, in decades. He's in a perfect spot with the team this year to have an absolutely phenomenal year. And at the end of the year, he's got the Yankees trying to keep him, and he's going to have the Mets coming after him. You cannot have a better bidding situation, so I do think that that's absolutely reasonable to think that he's going to get $50 million a year.
Now, does it matter? Are the Mets going to go after him no matter what? Or if you're a Yankee fan who wants to keep Soto, are you rooting for the Mets to be competitive and make the playoffs so Cohen doesn't have egg on his face after a bad year and feels like, I have to pay Soto no matter what because of what happened in 2024?
Don, I don't think it matters. I think the Mets are going after him one way or the other.
Okay.
Whether it's because they have a bad year and they, you know, they lose Alonso and they have to begin to change the conversation, or if it's because they're looking ahead and saying, we need an anchor to build around going forward, and certainly Soto at his age, would make him more attractive to the Mets if they see a long runway ahead of them in developing the pitching. Whatever it is, the Mets are going after him.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that because, you know, Yankee fans have been calling in, and it looks like such a perfect match with the Yankees. It really does. The ballpark, the support system, the Dominican fans, all of it, it seems perfect. And the Yankee fans are saying, well, the Yankees should sign him now. Buster, I don't think that's a viable opportunity. I don't think that Boris would advise him to do that. Even if the Yankees came in and said, listen, we'll give you $500 million for 10 years, I think he'd turn it down.
And all we have to do is look at the Aaron Judge situation and his negotiations to tell you that to get into an open bidding situation, which is what Scott always advises, you're going to get more money, right? The Yankees are sitting at 320, and then lo and behold, Peter Seidler, the Padres, kind of come out of left field, surprise everybody. They offer him a $400 million contract, and that, in the end, was what made the Yankees move to 360. And so if you're Boris and you see this, you know, a phenomenal bidding situation developing, yeah, you probably wouldn't have that conversation unless, you know, Soto became one of the very few Boris clients who went to Scott and said, look, I'm happy. I want to stay here. Jared Weaver did it with the Angels. Andrew Jones did it with the Braves. You know, it's possible for Soto to go and do that. Right. Altuve's done it. So it's possible that that happens, but it's unlikely. And if you look at the history, it would make sense for Soto to hit the market because he probably would get more money if he had these two teams bidding on him.
And also, Buster, he loved playing in D.C. He said he wanted to play his whole career. They offered him $440 million. He turned it down. So what, now you're 5 months away from being a free agent. Why would you change your tack? It doesn't make sense.
Exactly. Right. And I you know, I just personally hope for him. You know, I had this conversation with Alex Rodriguez when we worked on Sunday Night Baseball together. When he signed with the Texas Rangers for $252 million, you know, twice as much money as any of the other professional athlete in North American sports with that contract. And within 2 weeks, he did an interview in which he said to the New York Post, yeah, you know, all things being equal, I wish I had signed with the Mets, which was one of the saddest things that I ever saw. I hope that in the end, Soto, who's going to get an incredible amount of money no matter where he signs, if he decides, look, you know what, this place or that place is the place where I'm going to be most happy. And maybe that's with the Mets, maybe it's with the Yankees, you know, we'll find out. But he seems really happy with the Yankees.
And he's playing very well. Buster, thanks so much, always.
Okay, guys, thanks for having me.
That's Buster Olney. So interesting stuff on the pitching situation and some of the surprises in baseball. We haven't talked to you that much, so we're going to take some phone calls when we get back. You know the number, 1-800-919-3776. But first, Peter is going to tell us who's
about splashing
under the
around.
Mr. Bubble.
Wait, what'd you say?
Who's under the Mr. Bubble?
Oh, under the Mr. Bubble. Hey, guys. Peter Rosenberg here to tell you about my friends over at Bath Fitter. They did my bath. Did a hell of a job. Customized it for my needs. Process easy. One expert installer. Done in a day. No demo. No mess. And Bath Fitter is a permanent, high-quality solution with a lifetime guarantee. 3 million happy customers just like me. For a limited time, get 0% interest to save $500 on a complete Bath Fitter system. Start designing your bath today like I did at BathFitterDesign.com. There's only one Bath Fitter.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And, boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
Thing happened yesterday to me during the game. So, felt like treating myself. I walked during a commercial to the press room, and I decided, you know what? Treat yourself, Michael. Have a chocolate chip cookie.
Aw.
Right?
Why not?
Grab it. Bite it,
And Dan Snyder shows up, slaps you right in the face.
You know what? This is worse.
Okay.
This is worse.
It was a raisin.
It was raisin.
Ugh. Raisins.
There should
delicious.
Be clear marking. Mm-hmm. Why should I have to put team. Myself through that?
No, it's not. I don't like that you went through that. I don't think it's right for you or your family.
And I gagged, too. I gagged.
Well, come on. Raisins are delightful.
They're not. They're just shrunken grapes.
No, the grapes are delightful.
Hold on. Even if you think raisins are delightful, they're not delightful relative to chocolate chips.
What a great comeback.
I'm not arguing that he was duped, but I don't think he should be upset because raisins are delightful.
Yeah, it's just disappointing when you're thinking chocolate chip.
Right. You're thinking chocolate chip and you get something, you know, remotely healthy.
I wouldn't say they're remotely healthy. They're just like nothing with sugar. They're still straight sugar. Does a raisin have anything redeeming?
Well, even grapes are like that.
I feel like raisins are even worse. I mean, I'm making that up, but that's how I feel.
I like grapes.
No, I like grapes.
I love grapes.
I don't think they're particularly redeeming. They have antioxidants. I know they have antioxidants.
But if I'm sitting there watching a game and I'm eating a bowl of grapes as opposed to a bowl of Doritos, I'm better off with the grapes.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, okay. Don, you know, Don is like that guy in recovery who's comparing everything to heroin. We know it's not Doritos. But,
and I've told you, I'm in recovery.
Yeah, right, and we know.
But even if it was a delightful Sun Chip, it's still better.
Sun Chip, by the way, that you want to know misleading, though?
Oh, I know. You're so right.
I used to eat Sun Chips by the bag just because it says 30% better than other. But 30% better than what? You look at what's in the back of it. You go, this is nothing but trans fat, calories, salt, sodium. And I would, every day when I was a fat schlub working at the after school program that I worked at, I would stop by the grocery store and I'd grab a half a pound of tuna salad. And a bag of Sun Chips. And I would just sit there like a pig.
Right, you thought you were doing something great.
Yeah, I'm like, this isn't that bad.
Fish, Sun Chips.
Yeah, there's a little mayo in the tuna, but I'm having these healthy Sun Chips. And it's fish. Ugh, look at me. I showed up in New York a couple years later, looked like a fat pig.
But look at you now.
I'll tell you what, by the way, though, over the weekend, I don't know if you guys saw the pictures on my Instagram of me in my like suit and stuff.
Tremendous.
The hair and makeup people, when they got me ready, I had them just give me a little bit of the, just for men, on my. Hold on, let me do this. Anthony, sales opportunity. I used a little bit of the just for men on my beard.
How'd it look?
Oh my God! Let me tell you something. I know you can't see on TV that I have any grays here, but I do, and I also have these kind of thin spots in the beard. So you take a little bit of the just for men.
Okay.
You hit the gray spots, but then you also just hit some of the thinner spots, and it gives me, you know, at first they went a little too far. I looked like DJ Khaled. I said, let's bring this thing down a notch, and then Michael, it felt great. Some people feel bad about getting a little help. I didn't. Loved it. If I was a woman, I'd be wearing a push-up bra every day.
Wow, I'm not a woman, and I do every day.
Is that true?
Yeah. Why not?
I don't mind help. Give me a little help.
Let's go to Joe in Washington Heights. Joe.
Hey, Michael, Dom, Peter, how you guys doing?
Good.
Great. What's up?
So, it's funny. I didn't know Buster was talking today, but I wanted to talk about solutions I've been hearing for the arm injuries. And right. Some of them are, I guess, what Buster brought up, so I'm not going to be redundant. So, the first one was the pre-tacked baseballs that they're using in Korea, and then I think they tried it a couple years ago in the minor leagues, but Trevor Plouffe was saying that his problem with the sticky stuff when he was playing ball was that the ball wasn't white, and that's really what tripped him up, and that the too strong of grip that players are doing is just blowing out their ligaments.
Well, that's what Tyler Glasnow said, Joe. And because they don't have the sticky stuff, you're gripping it even tighter to get that spin, and it's putting so much pressure on the elbow joint.
Yeah, and the other ones were banning radar guns outside of the MLB. I don't really like that one, but limiting the bullpen, I won't say, and then increasing the strike zone. I don't really agree with any of these, really.
But they won't do that, Joe, because you know ultimately what they want is more offense. So if they make the strike zone bigger, there's going to be less offense. But you know the strike, Don, you'll see when in a couple of years with Marco. You go to, like, you know, Little League games or whatever, or travel team. They've got radar guns on kids. It's disgraceful.
But
you can't outlaw it.
No, because they got to scout, and one of the things they want to scout is, if do you throw hard? You know, what was that line from what was the movie that the guy that came up as a rookie in his late 30s?
Rookie of the Year.
The rookie.
Was it not the rookie?
It was about Jim Morris.
Right, yeah. From the Tampa Bay Devil Rays at the time. And I remember one of the scenes in the movie, like the scouts, like, if I don't report a guy throwing 98 miles per hour, I'm going to lose my job. Like,
I think it is the rookie.
That is what you look at. You know, that's the early indication. Hey, this guy's got velocity. We can work with this. So no, you're not going to ban that. And there's nothing wrong with velocity. But the point is that, does it have to be so much constantly? Some of the best pitchers in baseball, they are hittable in the first inning. Why? Because they're not going nuts in the first inning because they want to last the seventh and the eighth inning. And they try to pace themselves. But some of these guys come out and they're throwing, you know, 96-mile-per-hour sliders in the first inning. About the fifth, sixth inning, they're done. And most of these organizations are cool with that because they want to get into the bullpen. They're hot to get to the bullpen. They don't want you to go the third time through the order. So sometimes the teams are the worst enemy of the pitchers, too, where they're not looking for anybody to go the distance anymore. And these pitchers aren't looking at wins. They're looking at velocity. They're looking at how many strikeouts they can get in the amount of time in which they're going to be able to pitch, because they're not saving themselves for the seventh, eighth, ninth inning because they know they're not going to be around that long.
Baseball has so many issues when it comes to young people becoming baseball players. So I was talking to a friend of mine whose son is 10 years old, right? On a travel team. He's 10. Mm. Let that sink in. $5,000 to be on a travel team.
Wow.
You're losing lower income people that can't afford to put their kids on a travel team. And then all the travel teams are looking for velocity. These kids are constantly throwing. Kids also have their own private coaches that they pay, and they're throwing with them. That's why arms are exploding. Arms can only take so much.
Now listen, Marco's very young, and the town in which we have baseball, they're doing, he's in Coach Pitch right now, which basically is a pitching machine that they're using, and they're kids. But what I'm seeing in the soccer that Marco plays, and it's all great, but I watch it. When I was a kid, you played. And then as you got better, hey, you got singled out. Hey, you're actually pretty good. Let's work on some things because I think you might have a future. It feels like the second these guys start to play, you're preparing them for the big leagues. When can we just have some fun? You know, let's go out, have fun, play games, and then when you start to get to high school or college, then like we start working on things. But it feels like.
But I blame the parents, Don. It's parents that might have had failed dreams at what they wanted to do, and then they're living through their child because they want the child to become a professional baseball player.
Right, they're living vicariously through their kids. Yeah. No, it's not just baseball. It's all these sports.
It's all the sports.
And the thing with Marco is, Michael, he's only 6, so he doesn't want to do drills. He wants to play. He wants a game. When there's a game, then he gets excited. But when he starts going through drills, he kind of gets bored. And I wonder if that happens now, too, where the kid gets bored and they pull him out, and there could be a future there because you're so focused on doing all of the little skill things and not just letting them go out there and play and kind of figuring out as you play. And I just don't want to sit there and take my 6-year-old kid or my daughter who's getting into different things and start preparing them for greatness. That should just come naturally because not everybody's meant to be a Major League Baseball player.
You know what you're going to have fun with, Don? And fun, I'm saying facetiously, is seeing how out of control the parents are. Riding umpires. It's unbelievable. I sit there, I don't say a word. I mean, I cheer when Charlie does something well, but I'm not riding it. I mean, come on. It's out of control.
Yeah, we haven't gotten to umpires yet, but I can see, you know, and it all comes, and I think I haven't seen it personally. I mean, I saw it when I was a kid, and my dad was my coach, and I would see sometimes, you know, father screaming and yelling, and it's what you said. They failed at trying to become a major league ball player, basketball player, whatever, so they're living vicariously through their kids. But I just hope that it's supposed to be just fun. Because if you take the fun out of it, then there's a lot of really good potential athletes out there, Michael, that end up quitting because it's not fun. Eventually, you're going to get to the point where you're going to have to know all the ins and outs when it really becomes ultra competitive. But at a young age, I like what they're doing in our town. Just have some fun. They're keeping score, but it's kind of on the square. You know, like there's not a big scoreboard. The coaches kind of keep it for clerical reasons. But the kids are just, Marco just wants to get up at bat. He wants to catch the ball when it's hit to him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, once you start getting like clinical, then he wants to check out. He's six. He wants to run. He wants to have fun. He wants to play.
I always wonder in the case of like, kids who do anything intensely, and I see this in my other worlds with DJing or making music or any of that stuff, like where the line gets drawn on whether you're overstepping as a parent. Because like the kids will all tell you they love it, but simultaneously it can feel like they don't even get the chance to choose whether it's something they love.
Right.
It's just like, this is what you love. Oh no, trust me, they love it. They love it. But how do they decide?
Like Jalen does dance. I don't take her to dance because it's our thing on Saturdays. I take her to dance class. I watch. We go for breakfast. I'm not thinking Juilliard when I just think she wants to have fun and dance and she's preparing for a recital and all that. At some point, I guess we're going to see if there's potential. We start moving in a certain direction. But right now at this age, just have fun. And I feel like sometimes in certain towns and certain communities, it's almost like, well, let's try to make the next Derek Jeter. If he's going to make it, he's got to, you know, skate. Jaromir Jagr started skating it too. So let's get skates on them. Can I see if Marco can skate first before I start buying like $1,000 worth of equipment and throwing him on the ice and find out he doesn't like it? Let's just have fun and let it all kind of grow. That's how I got into it. And then my talent wasn't good enough. And maybe if my talent was, we would move them in a different direction, but not at such a young age.
Let's go to Michael in the Bronx. Michael.
How's it going, guys? Thanks for taking my call.
What's
up? You got it.
Thoughts and prayers about the oatmeal raisin, by the way.
Thank you.
I was going to say, tough. I was going to wonder, Soto's been playing incredibly well. Judge has been slow. Obviously, he's not going to finish the year hitting under 200. If teams would start intentionally walking Soto, similar to what happened with Teixeira and A-Rod in 09 before A-Rod got hot, and if that happened, would they switch Judge and Soto in the order? I also had a fast question about why Trent Grisham hasn't been playing like defensive replacement league, but that's like a secondary point. But that's all.
So I'll answer your first one. I'll let you ask the second. I don't think we're anywhere near that point. I think Judge is going to hit. I was of the opinion Judge has always been the number two hitter. Without protection, he still hit 62 home runs. And Soto preferred to hit third when he was San Diego. So I would have hit Soto third because I think Soto has such an unerring eye at the plate. He'd still get his walks no matter who's behind him. I just don't think we're anywhere near that. If it becomes that, maybe they do flip-flop it. But I don't think Judge's problem is that he's not swinging at strikes. I just don't think he's locked in yet. What was your question about Grisham?
I know Soto had a great play to start the season. He doesn't look like a scrub in the outfield, but obviously Grisham is like a defensive genius in center, and Judge is like an elite right fielder. I'm surprised they haven't put him in for defense in the end.
I think some of the games that the Yankees won, especially the ones in Houston, Mike, you know, they were close. So you don't want to take Soto's bat out to make it a defensive switch. So I just don't think that they're going to do. I mean, Soto to me has, at least at Yankee Stadium, he can be better at going back on balls. There have been balls over his head that he has not been great at, but he's pretty good coming in, and he's shown a pretty good arm. So I don't think he's not a negative to them at this point, if that makes sense. But I don't think they're gonna risk taking Soto's bat out of the lineup in a close game to put Grisham's bat in the lineup. That doesn't make any sense. But Peter, talking about Dodge, that makes sense.
You're so right, Michael. Peter, that's me. New York, that's you. Let's talk Security Dodge, Long Island Ram and Wrangler headquarters. All right, did you hear about their 30 for 30 sale? Come get some. You could take up to 30% off MSRP during the next 30 days on a brand new Jeep Grand Cherokee 4XE or the Gladiator or Wagoneer or Grand Wagoneer, all up to 30% off MSRP. Go visit Michelle Scalisi during their Jeep celebration event and come get some.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Michael, Don, and Peter taking you till 6:30 now. We're only a television vehicle until 6 because they batting practice show on Yes.
What do you say to that, Don?
Wake up, Flip.
Well, but this is a takeover show, so it's all Meredith from the field with great interviews. So we will have ENN as a radio vehicle.
You should still wake up.
1-800-919-3776. Let's go to Ken in Connecticut. Ken.
Hey, what's up, guys? No haikus today, I promise.
I probably never again.
No, it's awful.
It's awful.
And you guys, like, go ahead.
It's my fault. I apologize. Never again. But you're more than welcome to call every day if you like.
And I would love it. Like I said, you guys have brought me in. Michael, you're my favorite announcer. So
there you go.
Here I am.
God bless you.
I love it.
So the thing is, as overjoyed as I am about the Yankees start, Shohei Ohtani, the story has just completely fallen by the wayside. Like, if you Google him, nothing even really comes up in the first, like, six searches of what's happening. So it's like, well, yeah, he's hit a bomb. That's great. And I know there's, like, the investigation is going on, and that's great. However, do we remember what it was 2 weeks ago when the season started? How concerned we were about Major League Baseball and this story? Like, what are we doing here?
Well, I think this is what I feel. I don't think that Major League Baseball wants to find anything. But, you know, I trust them that if they find something, it will be a situation that they'll take care of. The federal investigation supposedly is ongoing. Major League Baseball's investigation is ongoing. So we're not going to hear updates on that. But I think the most unbelievable thing to me, fans don't care about this. The guy has never had to take questions on this. Not once. What other athlete in any professional sport would be allowed to remain mum, not say a word other than a prepared statement, and never take a question? Did you gamble on baseball?
But you know what's interesting, Michael, is that the biggest problem with Major League Baseball is working in their favor in this situation. It's a regional sport. It was a big deal for a little bit, and then we kind of settle in. But
it's not a regional sport when it comes to a Dodger and the biggest name in the sport.
Yeah, but no one cares anymore. Like, if this had been LeBron James, it would be going on and on and on. I mean, Ohtani's a name, but let's face it, Michael, it's a name that resonates with a lot of people, but he's played in the West Coast his entire life. People are focused on their teams. Yankee fans are watching the Yankees. Met fans are watching the Mets, and now they've kind of settled into the season. It was a story before the season started, and once we started playing, nobody's focused on it because they only care about their team and they only care about what's going on in their world. Ohtani's 3,000 miles away playing in games that right now nobody cares about. Now, when he comes to New York, I'm sure there'll be a little bit of a stir because it'll get talked about again. And then when he leaves to go someplace else, it'll go back to not being a non-story.
All right, so let's say we buy into what you're saying.
Right.
It's a story in L.A. Why is he allowed not to answer questions?
I'm not defending that. I'm just saying that, you said fans don't care. First of all,
I didn't say that.
No, you just say the fans?
The fans should care. Of course, I didn't say the fans don't care. You said they don't care because it's regional.
But the fans don't seem to care when an athlete doesn't speak. Now all of a sudden you're going to be hypocritical and say, well, he should be talking whenever their favorite player doesn't speak. Well, why do I have to talk to you?
But it's just amazing to me, after every kind of tough loss, Francisco Lindor talks, Aaron Judge talks, Juan Soto, the biggest stars in the world. This guy does not have to answer a question, and he's in the middle of what could be one of the biggest scandals in baseball history, and he has not answered a question.
Is there anything that you can compare to this?
Nothing. There's nothing. I've never heard of a superstar, just completely be allowed to ignore the media, and in effect, ignore the fans, too. It's amazing to me. And you know who started it? The Angels. The Angels let him get away with it. And the Dodgers, well, this is what it's been. They let him get away with it. He had a press conference, read from a statement, and did not take the question that everybody wants to know. Did you gamble on baseball? Which he said in the press conference that he did. And then explain to me how somebody could take $4.5 million out of your account You didn't see it. Your representatives didn't notice. How did that happen?
But
it doesn't have to answer that question.
But it is amazing. Now, you know, granted, you know, a lot of these scandals and things happened with guys in New York, like Alex Rodriguez. But, you know, whether it was Sosa or McGuire with the PEDs or Pete Rose with his gambling scandal, it's all anybody talked about forever. Right? Why is this dying now? And I think it does play into the fact that, in general, people just care about what's going on. It's not a national sport anymore, Michael. It's just not. So, Ohtani, that's LA's problem. That's the Dodgers' problem. You know, they're focused on when's Judge going to hit? When's Nemo going to hit?
This guy's an international star.
I know, but the one thing I do think you exaggerate a bit, Michael, is his effect in the States. Yes, he is an international star, but again, to most people, all right, that's Japan's problem. Like, I don't know how much he translates into superstardom in the United States. Now, if he played for the Yankees, I think it would completely be unbelievable.
Well, he's playing for the Dodgers.
And in LA, it's a big deal, but I don't think people in New York care about what's happening with it. Now, it's better than the Angels because the Dodgers are really good, and I think the Dodgers have a little bit more of a following.
A
lot more, but not enough to where, Peter, it becomes a national story anymore. Once you threw the first pitch, you're focused on your team. Now, when the Dodgers come here, it'll be a traveling circus.
Well, there just hasn't been enough follow-up from it. I mean, I think this would be a really big story if frankly, baseball was requiring him to talk in any way. But because it's quiet, Michael, what do people really have to say about it? It's hard. There's no new information.
Yeah, I mean, what are we going to continue to have these discussions? He should be talking. Or, gee, how could he have not known about the $4.5 million? We have nothing to go on, which is exactly their plan. And I would love for it to happen in New York. I always talk about this guy because he's a good friend and he's a dogged reporter. I would love to see them try to pull that nonsense with Joel Sherman. And there's some good reporters in L.A. It wouldn't be allowed. He would be in Hal Steinbrenner's office. Why is this going on? We have to ask this guy questions.
Now, I was kidding on the square a little bit when I said about the lack of interest on the West Coast in sports, but this is kind of feeding into what I was saying, is that there's no accountability out there, Michael. Remember when Manny Ramirez was a Red Sox, it's like, oh my God, well, they embraced him in LA. They didn't care about his antics or anything, because that's just kind of how things are out there. So I don't know how much they care out there, Michael. And so the media, I think, covers as much as they think the fans care. I don't know if the fans in LA or the fans on the West Coast have that level of accountability that they have here at the East, where the media is just kind of going with what the fans want to know. They demand information. The media goes out there and gets it. I think the media is taking the cue from the fans. The fans don't care, so the media doesn't care.
Yeah, but again, I'm not going to sit here and judge the LA media, but your job is not to give the fans what they want. Your job is to get to the truth. And then if you get to the truth and you have a big story, the fans might want it.
No, unfortunately, Michael, the job is your publisher telling you what story to go out there and get, and they're motivated by what the readers want to read about.
Well, what publisher wouldn't want to win a Pulitzer Prize and find out that there's something untoward going on with Shohei Ohtani? It could be the biggest story ever. And you're allowing him to get away with not answering questions. It's inconceivable to me. Peter, again, you said it. Think about an athlete in the middle of something like this that has never had to answer questions. A-Rod answered questions. Pete Rose answered questions. Where are the questions? Where are they? Where are the answers? I hope that the investigators are making him answer questions.
It's very weird, Michael, and in the long run, it could end up looking very, very bad for baseball. The fact that Michael Kay is pointing this out, now granted, Michael, you're sort of in a unique position, voice of a team and have a talk show in a major market, but I have to imagine throughout baseball, people are having this conversation. Not just people writing. You have Dodgers writers who must be thinking it and frustrated because they think they have the opportunity to get to a big story. But throughout the country, people must be thinking, what gives here? Not to mention every other ball player who's been investigated for other stuff where they would not get off these guys' backs. I mean, all these other subjects. Now, granted, you could view this as a different sort of controversy than a steroid situation, but this seems like a standard that is unfair and that there's no precedent for.
Think about it in football, which is the most they control the media more than anybody. The biggest stars, the quarterbacks, they have to answer questions at least once a week. Bill Belichick, although he didn't say anything, he had to answer questions once a week. LeBron James has to answer questions after every single game. Shohei Ohtani has yet to answer a question. inconceivable to me.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.